This is Michael Ostrolenk, and I'm speaking with Carrie Severino. She's Chief Counsel and Policy Director for the Judicial Crisis Network. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You have an interesting project on Mrs. Kagan. Can you speak to that and the upcoming Supreme Court case on Obamacare?
Exactly. We just released a white paper, Justice Kagan, the Justice Who Knew Too Much, making the argument that Justice Kagan, during her time as Solicitor General, was so involved with the defense of the Obamacare law, the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, that she must recuse herself now from the cases challenging its constitutionality. And right after the paper came out, this became an even more focused issue because the Supreme Court has now accepted cert, not on one but or two, but on three different cases that were all part of the 11th Circuit argument, and they've even granted up to 5.5 hours to argue these cases. That is extraordinary. Normally you get 60 minutes of argument. So this is a this is going to be a historic case. We've been saying that all along it's going to be the case of the century, and now the Supreme Court has really underlined the importance. What we're concerned about is that one of the justices on the case is essentially tainted by her previous involvement in this issue. So we want to make sure that the decision that is going to be so important to our whether our limited government really continues, that is decided by justices who are appropriately sitting on the case.
What kind of role did Ms. Kagan play in Obamacare?
Well, the Solicitor General normally addresses cases that have come up through the appeals process. They have to okay an appeal for any government cases, and then they take care of them at the Supreme Court level. They do all the arguments. But in this case, there was strategy meetings going on with the White House, with DOJ officials, starting as early as January 2010. This is months before the bill was even passed, because they already knew people were talking about the constitutional concerns with Obamacare. So they started having these strategy meetings, and they said, should we get the Solicitor General's office involved? So Justice Kagan, the first thing she did, then Solicitor General Kagan, was said, yes, I definitely want my office involved. This is taking it out of the normal course and reaching down and saying, let's get involved at an early level. She then, the second major way she was involved is she determined the staffing on that. So this isn't just, you know, this automatically falls into the system and she had nothing to do with it. She said, I want to have my political deputy involved. There's only two political appointees in the Solicitor General's office, Solicitor General Kagan and then Neil Catel, her chief political deputy. Everyone else is just a career attorney. So she wanted someone else who was appointed by the Obama administration dealing with the defense of this law. And then throughout the process, there were emails. We know this through FOIA requests that have produced a number of email documents. We can see that there's emails where stuff is redacted, material that was either subject to attorney-client privilege or deliberative process privilege, but internal privileged material that we can't even see because it's redacted. Now, if Elena Kagan was able to see these emails, all of them that I'm talking about are ones where she's copied on them or things like that, she's receiving privileged information. That means that's information she can't even share with her own fellow justices on the Supreme Court. This puts her in a position of being very central to this type of strategy. She said on the record that she said, "Oh, I haven't offered my opinion on this law. No one's asking my opinion." But it doesn't matter if you've offered your own opinion. If you've been there in the room when other people have been talking about the strategy, she knows inside things about these issues that it's not appropriate now for her to go back and sit on this case as a judge.
Now, what would be necessary for her to recuse herself? Does she just have to say, I recuse myself, or is there a process that other people can put pressure on the Supreme Court to encourage her to recuse herself? Mm-hmm. What's happening along those lines?
Many times now the justices will recuse themselves just by themselves, as a matter of course, because if they own stock in a company and it's one of the parties, or if their spouse or a family member is employed by a company or filed something in the case, they'll automatically recuse themselves. And it just comes out in the orders. It's noted at the bottom, Justice so-and-so took no part in the consideration of this case. So all she has to do is you know, tell the clerk of court, I'm going to recuse myself in this case. They don't even normally explain the reasons. People then have to kind of guess, and many times they can piece together what the reason was, but they don't even have to explain the reasons. However, it is possible to make a motion for recusal. That's happened on several occasions. And so it remains to be seen whether one of the parties or whether another organization might move that she recuse herself. The parties have a tough strategy point to decide there, because you don't want to shoot the king unless you know you're going to hit. And if they write an article saying, Justice Kagan, you are going to be partial in this case, we don't trust your vote, and then she decides to sit in the case, you've kind of lost one vote. So I think that I'm not sure we're going to see any parties moving for her recusal. But she, ultimately, the duty falls on her to determine that, yes, this federal statute, because it's by statute, it's 28 U.S.C. 455, outlines when you need to recuse yourself, and both because she's participated as counsel in the case, and because I think a reasonable person would question her impartiality in this case, two different provisions.